It's interesting in listening to that first side of the cassette, how almost inevitable it is that I state things as having been sort of thought up and then executed, rather than things having happened at a level much lower than any kind of cognitive, objective awareness. All of the really central compositional decisions made in this piece or in any other work that I might make, but let's confine things at this point just to edit for Pauline, all of the central decisions occurred. They were not made. The actual characteristics of the way those occurrences happen are very important, and they're very important to my idea of what composition is. As I get older, I think I become more sort of dispassionately aware of what it is I'm doing. I think that probably happens to everybody. It certainly happens to other artists that I've spoken to who are approaching 40. It produces an extreme paradox for me, because I value the unthought about decision. I think I value it as being really the only decision that one should listen to, mainly because in one's sort of panic-stricken desire to find the right solution, one tries all sorts of things. There are all kinds of things that one might do, and one in a studio can quite often try them out. They never work. There's no reason why they shouldn't, but they don't. They're perfectly satisfactory from a dispassionate point of view, but they're not satisfactory from the sense of subjective rightness that one brings to bear on those kinds of decisions. So a growing awareness of the nature of one's working process tends to be a bit of a problem when the thing you're trying to do is remain unaware. Obviously, a balance between the two is desirable. That opens up a huge subject, a subject which has got to do with the context of making things in the first place. One of the biggest and most powerful reasons for speeding up one's compositional procedure, getting it more efficient, as it were, is if there are other reasons for making a work besides purely personal ones. Like, for example, meeting deadlines which have checks attached to them. I feel very confused at the moment about the whole business of composition in a professional context, responding to the needs of a marketplace, which I think is put forward by many people as being really by some people is the only valid way of going about professional composition. I feel a growing sense of support for the amateur attitude. That's because I personally have never been in a situation where I've had to earn my living from composition. But I think if I had ever have been in that situation, I would have found something else to do. I'm not suggesting that professional craft composition is less or evil or wrong at all. I've made a few film scores and I really enjoy doing that. It's a very nice, tight, technical situation to be in, and it tests one in all sorts of ways, which is very good. But I would never regard the results as compositions. They're soundtracks. So that my attitude and philosophy towards composition is deeply embedded in the idea of personal individual realization through creative activity. There was a time when that was an extremely fashionable attitude. There are other times when it's not a fashionable attitude. I think I've reached the point where I realize in me that it is not fashion, as far as I'm concerned. It's a very deeply held conviction and a base for work for myself. That's why I would never accept a commission which required a particular work or a particular kind of work or had a completion deadline. Not because I couldn't produce something. I think I probably could produce something, but it would be a waste of time, a waste of my time, and a waste of everybody else's time too, really. I feel that when one makes a work, one embarks on a new ball game each time. There's got to be an aspect of the unknown, an aspect of risk. I don't mean cosmetic risk, I mean fundamental creative risk attached to every work. Usually this results in imperfect musical objects. But I've got a funny feeling that the very best creative work contains within it imperfections which actually are the very things which trigger and fire and catalyze the work into something much greater than it might have been if it had been more perfect. An imperfection can often function as a unique decision. A risk can sometimes infuse a whole idea with a very sort of specific character that it wouldn't have otherwise, like a beautiful woman with a livid scar. all that arose from talking about decision making. After each piece, I go through a period of intense recrimination. I think of myself as lazy, indolent, with no technique. I think of all the things that I perhaps should do in order to make a better piece next time. Like, for example, making a checklist of all the possible technical things that I might do to a sound. And sometimes I even go to the extent of doing this when I feel a work coming on. But I realize that letting oneself be taken over by not only the elation but also the extraordinary dread of failure, and letting oneself respond to the need for success, that duality, letting oneself be completely taken over by that, is the only way that one is going to produce a work which is more than the sum of its parts. And that's got to be the objective. I think about Edith for Pauline, and I think about the original interview. I still have worries and doubts as to whether all I've done is raped and pillaged and blanderized the actual, true, essential, emotional intactness of the idea that's represented by that interview. I'm not sure. I hope I've added something to it. But I could well be wrong. It's impossible for a person to have any real idea of what they've done in their own work. What I've done really is I've made an intuitive attempt to produce some kind of subliminal statement using the interview as a starting point. And whether I've succeeded or not, I really can't say. But I do know that the only way for me to work is to get myself in such a state that the work has me completely in its grip. When I'm like that, I can't sleep. I can't think about anything else except the work for weeks. I'm sure everybody works in their own unique way. But that is the way that I'm convinced now is my way. And I believe that it produces a particular kind of characteristic situation when one's making a work. I think ideas go into one's sensibility in all sorts of mundane ways in your everyday existence. They roll around in the primal soup, as it were, and then for all sorts of reasons, usually at the most inconvenient times, they start to give off a condensate. They start to build pressure. Then, really, you're faced with a combat situation. Or another analogy which I feel is very apt is a championship situation. You may very well be the best runner there, but it's no good being the best runner there and being last in the race. And when you make a work, you're making a race It's a race. It's a contest between you and the material. Between you and yourself, really. And you owe it to yourself to face up to the contest fully every time. If you do that, then the work that you make, no matter how imperfect it may be, is going to have value for other people. It's going to function properly and I think positively within the cultural and social context of your own life and of your life with other people's. It becomes then a potential communication, not just an advertisement. And that happens a lot with people in amateur situations, in sport and recreation and hobbies and so forth, and often in craft. People do things for what I believe are very much the right reasons. And the reason for doing something in the area of creative expression is all important. It's absolutely critical that the reason, the motive, is genuine. Otherwise, the activity becomes cloned by other kind of criteria. I don't want that to sound pompous, presumptuous, or judgmental. It's not intended that way. I don't feel that way. I feel it's a very ordinary thing. But I feel very strongly about it being an ordinary thing. This affects my attitude towards composition very much. So that when I'm in the final stages of the race, everything depends on how I react then. It is a moment, sometimes quite a prolonged moment, but a moment in my limited number of opportunities to discover myself. And so I must give it everything. And the only preparation, really, that I can give myself is to try to allow myself to confront that kind of problem solving as often as possible. Every time I make an attempt, it needs to be at that level. It doesn't matter how often you train at the base camp, it's not going to really be any real indication of how you perform when you have to do the real thing. For a creative artist, the definition of a creative artist for me is somebody for whom the process is the real thing. That is, it is intricately linked into their idea of themselves at such a basic level that it exists within their physical and emotional and psychological makeup at the same sort of state as the size of their nose, the colour of their hair, their awareness of their own body, and their view of the world. That's what I try to convey to students of composition that I teach. And that's another subject, which I also feel strongly about.